I skipped the sitting yesterday from 2 to 3, and this lovely feeling of playing hooky. Strange how the mind works. Today there'll be, I'm told, 50 people to offer food, so we expect you to eat a lot. But one of the criticisms of Western Buddhism is that it's a kind of feel-good philosophy, and there is a tendency sometimes with retreats and meditation situations where you get this kind of very precious, this is so precious, this silence. And then if anyone comes into that silence and perception, then there's a kind of annoyance. You're disturbing my retreat. Which is just a kind of feel-good selfishness, isn't it? And then people kind of walk around tiptoe, whispering. Which makes me sick sometimes. Because it's not about being precious, it's about being free. So that, like, when a lot of people come, obviously, because they're offering us foods, I think it's pretty easy to be grateful. But you can see that when there are a few people on a weekday, then the mind gets certain kinds of inputs and it responds in a certain way. It's like the waves of the sea come in, go out. And when there's a lot of people, then the mind responds in another way. That's just nature. And we kind of, if we're not practicing Lompo Dun suggestion, we think that this response I'm getting is mine, and the situation outside is coming into me and either bothering me or not bothering me. But if you look at it, it's actually one piece, isn't it? There's a more silent and quiet social milieu, and there's a more quiet response. There's a more active, energetic milieu, and there's a more active response. So are they really separate? Not really separate, they're kind of one piece, one little drama coming and going. And so when, the way I read Lompo Dun's suggestion, when the mind goes outside, that's the cause of suffering, and the result of the mind going outside is suffering, that would be kind of thinking that that whole tableau is somehow, you know, that your reaction is somehow your reaction, but it's out there, because the reaction you have is still an object of mind. So whether my response to the environment is very tranquil, so maybe I'm out in the backwoods and I'm sitting with one of those lovely pine trees. You're not supposed to say that in New Zealand, lovely pine trees, I know. People hate pine trees. But you're just in a kind of quiet space, then that quietness reflects back, and it makes you feel quiet. And then you're in a more busy space, you've got a busy response. But it's actually one thing. So the idea of knowing the mind as the mind is that even like emotions and feelings and perceptions, they're still objects of consciousness and not mind. They're just natural, just natural. How else would you feel? And then within that flow of life, we have preferences, and that's also natural. You'd prefer maybe silence until you started to starve. Then you prefer people to come. So you have preferences. The preferences are all right too, that's natural. But it's the grasping, it's the attachment that we're concerned about. And the grasping and attachment, the signs of that are annoyance or fear or anger, or they're the habits of grasping. And when we awaken to those and we're patient with them, then we don't feed those, then we just, the flow of nature is as it is, and then we find that the path is knowing the mind as the mind, just not reacting. So then you watch, you just watch. What, you know, this situation creates this, and this other situation creates that, but it's just nature, nature and flow. So there's action response, just going on all the time, because we are sense beings. Our sense consciousness is affected, there's a response from our sense bodies, blah, 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 blah. But that which is not reacting and not responding is awareness. And that's where we find peace, freedom, liberation. So everything's practice, right? Everything's practice. So if a lot of people come and you want to run to the woods, fine. You know, it's fine. But you see that as liking, disliking. And then the mind begins to have a peace with the whole thing of it, rather than just this being kind of this feel good, get my space together, leave me alone, I'm meditating. Sometimes we'll get, in monastic communities, that you'll get someone who's read the texts and says, well, I need to get jhanas and I need to get these insights, so just feed me and leave me alone. And you ask them to work, and they say, that's not in the texts. And there's again this textual selfishness. You know, I can justify in the texts why I need to do this, this and that, you take care of the monastery and feed me and I'll get enlightened. That's an exaggeration. But you can see how the meditation can also become a kind of selfish holding, precious kind of holding. And that's not freedom. That's really not freedom. That's why I always, you know, attitudes of service and communal references and how are you doing? How can my practice help you? Dedicate the merits of my practice to you, to my parents. There's always that sense of sharing and generosity. Because it would be a shame if it always became very selfish. You're kind of missing the whole point of it. And then today is the last full day. So what does that do to your mind? Last opposed to first. So if you know, the first day you have a feeling, anticipation or relief or something arises, and just a very perception of first. And then last day, a different perception arises. Oh, great, I'm out of here. Or I'm never going to see such good food again. Or I have to go to work. Or, and that's just the flow of nature too, isn't it? First, last. Beginnings, endings, it's nature. So beginnings condition endings, endings condition beginnings. The quality of the retreat will condition the way you feel now, which will condition where you're going. It's just the flow of nature. And within that flow there's awareness. So you have this kind of enigmatic statement, so still flowing water, things like that. Still flowing water. So in this flow that we have today of good people coming, that's, you know, that's the turbulence. And then the stillness is knowing, oh, the turbulence feels this way, inwardly or outwardly. So it's very straightforward that way. And even the preference, oh, I prefer this or I don't prefer that, and that's just part of the turbulence. So we're not trying to live a life where we're just trying to eliminate all turbulence, because you couldn't do that. But we're just, you know, we are trying to create situations which are helpful. We're not kind of practicing in the middle of Trafalgar Square or something like that. Although if you were there, you would practice. So we're trying to create a good environment, but not just to get attached to it and precious and selfish. So the kind of generosity of heart and that, and adaptability is important. In terms of your practice, again, if you think about what's the minimal amount of concentration you should be able to sustain, train in, it would be around the five hindrances. So it's good to study those: ill will, sensual desire, dullness and sleepiness, restlessness, anxiety, and uncertainty, doubt, those five. And those are the things they're the kind of classical definitions of how the mind is unable to stay present in the moment and deep in stillness. So that's the kind of minimum kind of requirement in meditation. So when you when you pick up your meditation object, to really be diligent in training with your meditation object. Try to find something that appeals to you. See it as a craft and watch the hindrances. Get to know them. Get to understand how you can abandon them and let go of them. So you just become adept, skillful in some kind of a meditation object. That's important. So you get consistency, understanding, confidence, stillness, these kinds of things. And then that stillness, of course, serves you in ordinary life. All right, let's do some more sitting.